Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
All right, we are live tonight with Josh Mallerman. If you do not recognize the name, A, I'm surprised, but B, you definitely recognize his work because we'll go into it later, but like 2018, there was a hot minute where all I ever heard about was the movie, and you know which movie I'm talking about. It was all on Netflix, and it was all anybody talked about for a while. So, but before we get into that, I always like to ask every author, what is your villain origin story?
My villain origin story would be, I think the ultimate moment was, so I had been like, You when you reach a certain point where you start writing regularly, you kind of look back and you see a bunch of breadcrumbs, right? Like you wrote comic books as a kid, you wrote a bunch of poems in high school, you tried short stories and showed your friends, like you made cartoons, whatever it is, breadcrumbs that say like, oh yeah, dude, you were heading this way the whole time and you didn't know at the time. But the villain origin would be, I played in this travel basketball league, and we won this tournament in Ohio, and it was this incredible moment. It was awesome. And I got home and just sat down at like our word processor thing and pounded out like a 40-page account of this tournament. And if you think about high school, I think I was a junior, you know, a 3-page paper sounded like a lot back then. And I just sat down and like could not stop. And then I printed out like that printing, like a copy for everyone on the team and the coaches. So we're talking like 16, 17 copies. It was crazy. And I handed them out to them, blah, blah, blah. Even then, I didn't think you're a writer, you know? And years later, I look back, I'm like, dude, that's your villain origin. That's the moment when you became like a writer.
I do have to say, you may have dated yourself just a hair there with a because I know exactly that sound we're talking about. Oh, man. But yeah, I never got that far. I did do the whole poetry thing in high school and a little bit later. I think I had the opposite problem. I can come up with like a good line and then, okay, what else is going to go with this? I don't have that. I can't do the length. Obviously, yours is a little bit different. A lot of times, like if somebody, I don't want to say just an author, because that's a huge accomplishment for anybody. But if writing is the whole thing, you've got a very specific type of day. You've also producer. Did I hear somewhere that you also a musician? Well, I see a guitar behind you. So yeah. What does a day in the life of Josh Mallerman look like with all of that stuff?
Well, you know, it is hard. I have found to step from one project to another. So you just finished writing a book and you're done. And you're like, it's probably wise to step away from it. And then I'll be like, oh, this is exciting. I can record an album now, you know, either in my office or with my band. I'm in a band with my best friends. We're called The High Strung. And it's kind of hard to step from the book. You would think, oh, now I'm going to go write a song. But it's like, oh, God, like your mind is not operating in that way. But that is typically how it goes. And recently I filmed a documentary on the writing of a novel. So it's a movie that begins with just the idea for the book and then tracks the entire experience of like writing it. And after finishing that, I decided, okay, I need a break from whatever that was. I just wrote a book, filmed it. I'm going to go record some instrumental dramatic music, you know? And I did. I did like two albums worth of it or something. And a year later, as we're editing the movie, my fiance, Allison, I'm sure I'll bring her up many times. Allison, or I said to Allison, man, now I gotta make, like, find music for this movie, you know? And she's like, what are you talking about? You made it right after you shot it. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, all that instrumental. So that should be the music for the movie. I was like, oh, right. I didn't even like mean it for, I meant to get away from the movie. And so sometimes that daily juggle, you begin to realize that they're actually helping each other, you know, like the songs you're writing are similar in theme to the book you're writing, and the music you did goes perfectly with the movie you just shot, that kind of thing. So a typical day is working on one of these projects, and I don't have any kids, and this is my job, or what, I don't love that phrase, but this is what I do. So, you know, it starts to make a little more sense when someone says, how have you written 40 novels and 20 albums and 10 scripts and this and that? And you're like, I mean, I have the time to do it. And if you do like a little bit every day, it's absolutely astonishing how quickly that stuff adds up. It's unbelievable. You could write one page a day in a year. And at the end of the year, you wrote a novel.
So it's a fair way to look at it too, because I mean, we all think we don't have time.
Yeah.
But you have time for what you make time for, I think, is what it comes down to.
But I do. Do you have kids?
I do. Well, they're grown and out now, but yes. Okay.
Grown and out is a good title for something. But yeah, I mean, dude, I don't need to tell you, but I see like my friends with kids, my bandmates, I'm like, oh, they are like swamped with it, man. Like I have so much respect for the writer who gets stuff done while raising kids. I can't comprehend it.
It's huge. Yeah. I do have to say, I was almost happy that my kids didn't do the whole like super sports and stuff by the time they got to high school. Cause I'm thinking it's like, that's so many more stops and practices and everything else. Like, we are swamped enough as it is. It closed on me. I had my notes up here, so I wouldn't forget anything. All right. One question I always ask every writer, because I started this as a book nerd, so I just jumped in. My first few ones I did, if you ever watch them, I'm basically just talking. We're just chatting. We're just talking books. And I realized afterwards, a lot of the people that watch these, they're people who want to be where you are. They are aspiring writers.
Oh, right.
And so I used to always try to come up with a specific question, something about finding an agent or writing. But let me just ask you this. If somebody asked you to teach a class tomorrow, mm-hmm. and so it's whatever you feel comfortable talking about, what is one piece of writing advice that you would want to tell somebody or to wrap something around?
I love how you frame that, because the idea of thinking of this in terms of as a teacher in front of a classroom and actually have like writers like facing you, you know, like sitting there. I think to me, the root, and this isn't the business side, this is just the creative side. The root from which everything else grows for me is the moment I got rid of the words good or bad for the rough draft. Once I realized that, okay, Bird Box, I had rewritten, gosh, like six times before we shopped it, right? Before my agent shopped it, it gets picked up by HarperCollins. They had so many notes that I rewrote that book again from scratch, except for except for the birth scene in the attic. That's the only thing I didn't touch. But my point is like, so, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? What did they buy? Like, because they bought this book, there were so many notes that I wrote it again, right? Well, what does that tell me? That tells me that, okay, the rough draft wasn't right, wasn't done, wasn't, you know, whatever it was got me through some door, but it wasn't, you know, there's a million changes that people had in mind, and why is wonderful suggestions. And something struck me even before then, something struck me that like if you know that you're going to change this draft, almost irrevocable, I mean, from writing from scratch, what does it matter how right or wrong this first draft is? And so instead of getting stuck on like, oh, the themes of this, or oh, I don't know how to end it. Okay. So the rough draft has a crappy ending. Great. And, but you still wrote the book. And the question that I always ask myself is, what would you rather have? 300 pages that need to be fixed and worked with, or nothing, or no pages at all. So to me, that's the biggest thing. It's sort of this faith in the rewrite. And that's a reasonable thing to have faith in, because when you rewrite it, it's going to get better. So faith in the rewrite, and then that liberates you for the rough draft. You're no longer feeling like I need to, everything has to represent me in full. This or that, everything has to be perfect. This character's name has to be perfect, has to mean something to me. Suddenly you're just like, let's see, what name on the wall here? Larry, he's called Larry, you know? And like, suddenly the rough draft becomes this freewheeling, loose, almost like an incredibly detailed outline, like a 350-page outline that you go back and you make better. And in the rewrites, then you start worrying. Oh, you're like, oh God, that line's embarrassing. And okay, well, let's fix it. But we have the line to fix, and we have the arc to fix. We have all that. So on the creative side, the thing that I would want to impart on every beginning writer, of course, everyone would have their own style, but be fully aware that it's okay if that rough draft is terrible. Don't even think in those terms. Just getting the rough draft down will give you the confidence of having completed a book, whether it's right or wrong, you finished one, and that will give you the confidence to fix it.
Kind of like when I clean the kitchen, you know, it's like, it's less for my wife to do when she fixes what I messed up. So I did have to laugh a little bit when you're talking about, because all I could think of when you were talking about the fact, the name, ooh, Larry. And I'm like, I was totally picturing Usual Suspects. He's like,
oh, yeah.
Making up the story, going off of whatever.
What a brilliant moment that is, man. Yeah.
You might enjoy this one. I think it was, I apologize if I quote the wrong person. I think it was Jen Lyons that told me that the book that she writes, The Rough Draft, never survives contact with the enemy, which is to her was like the editor, you know. It's like, boom, it's not going to be the same thing.
I have a letter, an editorial letter, like that I printed up and put on my wall because it was for the book Daphne. And typically, yeah, there's a ton of edits and a ton of notes, but that one it says something to the effect of like, I don't have very much to say, like very many notes. This is great. And I was like, it's like the dream letter you want from an editor. You know, you're like, okay, it works as is. Okay. You know, I printed it up. It's on the wall. You know, that's how excited I was. But at the same time, like a lot of notes is an exciting thing to get because like I was saying before, it's difficult to leave one space and enter another. So yeah, at first it's a little hard to enter, to leave, who cares if it's good or bad, and then enter the like, okay, now we're going to make this awesome state of mind. But once you're in there and seeing it getting better, and it, whether it's from notes or your own, because you would naturally change things anyway just by reading it, like that's a really good feeling. When you feel your book getting better, you're like, oh, ooh, no, now we got it. Now you can feel the rhythm to it. And now you're like, oh, you're saying that this is a great way to say this, or it's colorful, whatever it is.
I feel like, too, and again, I'm not an author, but I feel like, If your work was absolute crap, that gets a rejection letter. If you're getting a lot of notes back, that means somebody liked this enough that they want to see what it can be.
Yes, and that took me a moment to, like, Bird Box was my first published anything. You know, I didn't have a short story or anything out. And oh my gosh, when I got that, it was a stack of paper with red line. It was like old school looking. That's how she worked. And I was just like, I don't know what to do, man. I was like, it sounds like a cliche, but the thought that crosses your mind is like, do they even like this? You know, but it's exactly what you're saying. Yes, they do. And they think that it can be better. And their suggestions were great. In Bird Box, the book, there's like 7 housemates. In the rough draft, there were 14. And I kind of liked how because there were so many people, it was kind of chaos. You didn't really get to know one better than the other. It all added to the nightmarish sort of mess of it all. And they rightly said, if you have half as many housemates, we can get to know all of them. Tom and Don and Cheryl and like, all right, you're right. You're right. But I do like that other version also in theory right now, but they were right. And the book is better for what they, for 100% better for what the notes they gave.
Good. Plus I think, especially, I mean, horror is one thing and I can get what you're saying about the, you know, everything going on at once. But I also feel if you want, like, well, let's face it, they turned it into a movie. And, you know, to tug on the heartstrings a little bit, you've got to care about a character. And you just can't care about 21 characters, you know, at the same time.
So. Yeah. The rough draft for Bird Box was a bit, I mean, it was more than a bit experimental. It was entirely in italics, the entire book. Mm. So it'd be almost like a dream sequence. It was present tense, which it still is. No indentation, no chapter breaks, no quotation marks to let you know if somebody was talking. So somebody would say something, you're like, did Mallory hear that or did she think that? And to me, it was all super nightmarish and like, it was like the madness of what's going on. There's something really cool about that version. And it's also like potentially unreadable.
Yeah. The script writer probably, whoever had to, you know, that wouldn't be fun.
Like, oh yeah, I know that. But I keep that in a, where are you? It's in a crate over there. That rough draft for Bird Box is very special to me because it's like, it was just, talk about not caring good or bad. It's like an experimental brick. Oh, it was twice as long as what it is now. It was like an experimental brick. There's a side of me that would love to like publish that someday in some way. Like just cause it's like, it's weird. It's like its own weird work of art or something.
It'll be like the Broken Binding special edition or something like that.
Yeah.
So now that you've got a movie under your belt, I mean, I know you got some producer credits on a few things and you've had one of your books turned into a movie. Do you feel like it's changed anything about how you write now? Do you have that picture of it as on screen when you're thinking about stuff?
No, but if I'm going to be honest about that, because I've never really thought about this before, but the truth is when I'm writing, like, okay, I wrote a book recently about a vaudeville troupe and it crossed my mind like this one. Cause like, I don't know that the film world is going to be interested in this one. Cause it's like a period piece. Like that crossed my mind. Mm. And that kind of thought has never crossed my mind before. So yeah, what you're saying, it's somewhere in there. It's in the room with me, but I still wrote the book and loved every second of it. And it's not like I didn't write it because I'm like, oh, well, Hollywood's not going to like this one. You know, no, it was like, well, maybe somebody would, you know, but yeah. So, but it did cross my mind. That thought it is in the room.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, not that it would like, you wouldn't write a book just because it's not a Hollywood thing, but just the idea of maybe you're more conscientious of dialogue or something like that.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think the spirit behind it all and the thinking behind it all and the, you know, I mean, what is an artist if not like a series of judgment calls, right? Mm-hmm. And that all hopefully changes over time, but that's all still coming from the same place.
I do have to say, I haven't read all of your books, but you very much, like some authors, you can read a book and like, oh, that's a so-and-so book. Your stories are all very different. You don't seem to have like, I did this and now I need to do another one of that because that's what sold. Yours is just like, whatever comes out of this crazy head of mine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm writing.
Yeah. I have a new idea that I feel like is like the least sellable idea ever where I want to write like a book of novellas all based around sort of academia, like university settings and like a teacher is the, you know, horror stories. But all set around like, yeah, collegiate sort of atmosphere or whatever. I'm like, this sounds like this is like, you know, novellas are hard to sell, number one. And then like, oh, really? Academia? Like, what are you doing, man? But I have it. Like, I think I'm going to write that next just because I want to or something. It is weird, man. If you picked up Ghoul in the Cape, if you read Ghoul in the Cape and then you read Incidents Around the House, my name wasn't on it. There is no way you would think those were the same guy. Like, not same. Then you could say Unburied Carol, Bird Box, Inspection, Daphne. Daphne feels like, I wouldn't say younger, but a little bit. And yeah, none of them are alike. But that's not, it's not intentional. It's like, in a way it's intentional, but like, you know, like, I mean, Bob Dylan's an extreme example, but he really reinvents himself along the way, but he really doesn't make the same album twice. And I almost just feel like more like that. Like, you know, if you're working regularly, and I am, then you're sort of like tracking the changes in you as you go, right? And so let's say, I'm trying to do the math on this. Bird Box was like the fourth book I wrote, right? And then Black Man Wheel was the second book to come out. Well, that was book 20 for me. So, but that was one and two in the world. Right. So it stands to reason that they're crazy different. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so like the Beatles put out an album every 6 months, and there's a sense of, well, we just did this, let's do this now. And I think, you know, I think of that band, The Strokes, who their first album, which was great, and then like 4 years later, so they put out their second one, and it sounds a lot like their first one. And I think what was missing for them was that regular output along the way. Because if you're working regular along the way, you can't help but change. So
unless you're Nickelback.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that, but maybe I should. I don't know. Maybe I should. And then, so then, like, with me, it's weird. I've written 40 books, but only 13 have come out. And it's not like the last 13, you know what I mean? It's like they're spread out throughout this 40, this 20 year, this 40 book body of work. So it also stands to reason that they would just naturally be different because they're coming at different points in my life so far.
Yeah. And before anybody thinks I'm a hater, I actually do like Nickelback, but yes, every Nickelback song, you're like, that's Nickelback.
Well, you know what though? It's funny or interesting that you say that, because like there is some fear or something. Like I like it's comforting when you're like, oh, this is his voice or this is her voice. And I hope, I'm aware that I don't have that unified thing in my books. I hope that's not a turnoff. I hope that that's interesting to readers.
Yeah. And I think every author's got a little bit, a lot of times it's almost the editors. Like, I know Robert McCammon, big horror name. He took some time off because he was trying to get away from horror. He wanted to do something else. And it's like, but we want horror.
Yeah.
You know, for the longest time, I mean, he did put out a couple other things, but Jim Butcher, the publisher, wants the next Dresden book.
Yeah,
you know, they don't want this other little thing that you wanted to do off on the side. William Kent Kruger took forever to get Ordinary Grace out because people wanted mysteries from it.
Allison read all those Jim Butcher books. She freaking loves them.
Yep.
I haven't read them. Are they awesome?
Butcher is good. It's kind of funny. We won't take too much time away from Mallerman here, but the Butcher books, we kind of all love them in my house, but my daughter, her favorite one, and I'm actually kind of leaning that way too, but really loves the Cinder Spires novels, which he's just done recently. He's got two books and a novella out. My son was a huge fan of the Codex Alera books, which was an older series that he did. And I started out on Dresden, but you know, I'm old enough to remember when it was on TV for like a season, so you know. But yeah, he's definitely got some interesting stuff, and his son writes a lot like him too. He's got James J. Butcher.
Would you say with a guy like that, like just start at book one?
I would on all of his series, because Codex Alera is a very small series. It's like six books, but it's not serialized. It's boom, 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 boom. You start with one thing and it goes to the end. Same with the Cinder Spires series. And while you can kind of read the Dresden Files, I think, separately, he is... Have you ever seen, like, the show The Mentalist or any of those? Okay. His books, there is... It starts at the beginning, and yes, each one can stand alone, but there's an overall story. There's kind of like a bad guy that you start in the beginning, and it progresses.
So it's not like Agatha Christie where you literally could just start anywhere.
No, no.
There is a sense of building between them all.
You can, but I feel like you miss a lot of stuff if you don't.
All right, I'll try the first one of the Dresden one. I'll try that. Yeah.
Yeah, and hey, Josh from Jesse there.
Hi, Jesse.
There we go. I remember how that works. can't remember where I was going to go with that. But yeah, definitely, I would definitely read that. And if you don't have a lot of time for reading and you like audiobooks, there's only two books that I really push on audiobooks. One of them is Incidents Around the House, by the way.
Oh, man.
And the other one, James Marsters does the Butcher books. And he does it really, really well.
Man, I want to make sure I have her name right. Delaney Nicole.
Delaney Nicole. I wrote that down because I always forget it because she's got a three-peat. Delaney Nicole Gill, yes.
17 years old.
Yep.
I mean, she sounds like numerous people reading. It reminds me of in The Exorcist, that was one of my favorite moments ever, when Karis says to the exorcist, I can't remember his last name right now. So when he says to him, I've counted like three or four different, you know, voices so far. And Karis is like, there's only one. Or the other guy's like, there's only one. And you're like, ooh, God, that's creepy, you know? And I feel that way about Delaney. I'm like, that book sounds like different voices, man. And it's just all her.
Well, I think I told you in a post one time, and I've told her as well. When I first started listening to that book, because I think I had the advanced listening copy.
Wait, how'd you write her? I've never written her.
She's on Instagram or something.
So I could write her. Okay, I'll post about her all the time.
Yeah.
I'll write her a thank you.
But I told her, is like when she first started, and of course she's doing the little girl's voice, she's doing Bella's voice. And as she first going, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can listen to this for 8 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. But
by the time you get to the end of that book, she nails the sound, the feeling, the tone, the pacing. You feel everything Bella feels when Delaney's reading that book.
Man, it's like an experience. It's like, it feels in a way, it feels like an album to me. Like I could imagine, I don't really smoke grass very often because I get nervous on it, but I can imagine like turning the lights low, smoking grass and getting freaked out, you know? Like, she's good, man. Yep. And she's 17. And I posted about this today. Like, it feels good to like play any part or to be at all involved in the ascension of this young woman's career. Mm-hmm. Like, it's cool. So I was presented samples, and everyone, when I'm presented samples of like the audio reader, like they're all awesome in different ways, man. Honestly, God, like you could, I'll get sent like four samples of who they're thinking of, and they're all awesome. But there's something about hers where the young voice that someone else used felt like more like sort of like know-it-all young, like daddy says this, you know what I mean? And I'm like, no, what we need here is that Bella is like, she's not like, she's already scared. From the minute we begin, she's already there. So we need a voice that's like, we can't go from like playful to getting freaked out. And I'm sure that other person would have done it right in their own way. But that Delaney voice, I was like, oh, that's it. That is totally it. It's like, you're all like right away. She hits the ground running right away.
So I feel like you've actually answered one of my other questions that I was going to ask you, if you had any say in who did the audiobook.
Personally, I defer to them. I did. Dan John Miller is a brilliant musician and actor and friend around town here. Mm-hmm. He was even in the movie Walk the Line and stuff. And I asked if he could do Unbury Carol, and they did. They hired him to do it. That was incredible. Nice. And then also Ashley Lawrence from Hellraiser. Ashley Lawrence, who's awesome. I asked, you know, if she could do some of the stories in Spin a Black Yarn, and they said yes. So yeah, I have say in it, but I'd actually prefer to like to defer to them ultimately, because I feel like they know more than I do. Allison's way into audiobooks, so I'll ask her. I trust her opinion more than mine. If she's like, that guy sound, I'm like, screw it, let's go.
It sounds like you got a good wingman going there too. I mean, she remembered your music and all that stuff. Now she's got suggestions going. You did kind of segue. I was going to ask this later, but we've already segued into it, so it's perfect. Delaney did such a good job, as we talked about, doing that voice. However, you gave her that story, and you gave her the words of this little girl. How difficult was it to put yourself in that? Because you're putting yourself in that child's position, not a full-grown adult.
I'm really loving this interview. Your questions are just really, they're all in the same sort of like back of the brain spot for me. It's very, very nice to talk about this stuff this way. There's an outline on the wall on the other side of this computer, and it, I can't kind of read anything here. Can an 8-year-old narrate an entire novel without him or her ever being unreliable? I want 300 pages of a reliable child narrator. Like, the whole thing is like, it's not imaginary. Mm-hmm. It's not even a question of it's imaginary. It's not about the parents don't believe her. It's not about she's crazy. It's not her imagination. Nothing. This is happening. And one way to do that, obviously, is to have other people see other mommy as soon as possible also, right?
Hmm.
But another way is just is Bella herself. Like her actual, what she is saying in her tone of voice. There's no sense of like, I was tired and other mommy was here. Or, oh, you know, I hit my head once when I was younger. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, no, she is reliable. So was it hard or what was it like to put yourself in that space? She came like fairly fluid to me. She really did. There were times in the rewrite where you wouldn't even believe it, man. Like you would read a sentence and you're like, what? Like it would be like, mother sits beside me upon the couch. I'm like, wait, who, what ain't your mother sits beside me upon the couch? Like Josh, psh, you know? And like most of it was, but it was funny. Like your adult voice would like slip into the rough draft. Like when you weren't really paying attention, but she came fairly fluid. I mean, very fluid to me, but with that caveat, with that constant awareness of she is reliable. So make not, that doesn't mean make Bella brilliant, but make her true.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she also too, and she being the character that you wrote, it's perfect in the fact that like the things that she doesn't tell her parents and you're like, you're thinking you should tell her parents, but just all you completely understand why a young girl wouldn't want to tell her parents certain things. And when she does bring stuff up and the fact, oh my goodness, I should have re-listened to it. I listened to it back when it first came out, but there was just so much about what was going on in her head and what she decided to share with people and what she didn't. That was spot on for the character. That character was fluid from beginning to end.
Thanks. Thank you. You know, this one fella, he was like, I kept looking for you to cheat. I kept looking for like a cheat. And he goes, you almost had a cheat with the moments where the parents kind of use her as a sounding board when they're like sitting on the end of the bed philosophizing and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that now you're using a different narrator in a way. But because the book is present tense, that means Bella isn't remembering everything Dado said. She's hearing it right now. So the present tense aspect helps Bella's reliability.
Yeah. It was, I told everybody that's definitely a book that they should read. And like I said, it's also one of the few I tell people, it's like, if you want the physical book so you can have a trophy on your shelf, go for it. But you have to listen to the audiobook.
Yeah, I love it, man. I you know, it's funny. I see a few people, you know, you see a million opinions online, whatever, but I do see a few people that, like you said, at first they're like, oh God, I can't listen to this voice, for this is insane. I'm going to listen to this for 8 hours, you know? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of them are like, no, 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 just stay with it. Stay with it. Like, and you're right.
You in.
Like there is a getting used to it moment. But once you're in, it's like, oh man, this is scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's that first time when you start feeling the emotions and you're just like, what time is it? I can stay up for a couple more hours. It'll be fine.
Awesome.
Work sucks. Yeah.
That work. Screw work.
So while we're talking about writing characters and stuff like that, or just a story in general, How do you ever have a spot where you know as an author, it's like, okay, I've gone from a spooky story to a somebody might have to sleep with the nightlight on story?
That's a hard one to answer. Like, how aware of that are we, right? All I know is this. There's a bathroom scene in that book. Well, let me back up one second. Usually, I shouldn't have said bathroom and then back up at the same time. Those are unrelated. So I don't
know. That's better than your Daphne comment on that one interview I saw.
I don't remember.
You're talking about something about going into Bird Box and then going into Daphne, and then you're just like,
oh, yeah. Hey. Oh, yeah. Okay. I usually write, and you can see it right here, to horror movie soundtracks on this record player. I'm writing incidents around the house. I'm doing my thing. And I cannot find the right music for it. And I tried out, this was too sweeping. This was too dramatic. This was too this. And finally, I'm like, dude, have you ever written to like silence? And I'm like, all right, let's try it. So at night, dark house, dark office, like this light off. So it was really in this closet facing me and no music playing at all. And we have six, well, at the time, I think we had three cats that are like pittering, pattering through the house. So you hear little sounds, you know, little. And it was freaky. I'm in this office, in the dark, in the quiet, with just this light on my face. So even beyond the computer was like, what's in the room with me? That bathroom scene, if you remember, it's at Evelyn's house.
Yep.
I had to get up. I finished the scene. I like had to like pause, and I'm like kind of like shining the light around like the room a little. I get up, I exit, and I went and like found Allison. You know, I'm like, hey, how you doing? And she's like, are you freaked out right now? And I was like, no. I was just wondering, like, what are you up to, man? You know, like, and I'm like looking over my shoulder. I mean, I scared myself.
Well, considering that book, I don't know if writing it in the dark in front of a closet was your best move.
I know. I'll tell you, it's interesting. I feel the lack of music in Incidents Around the House. I feel it. It feels like the only music to me in that book is the open window in her bedroom, like the air blowing it, like that's what I hear is like cold wind or something. And I weirdly and amazingly, my friend and part of our theatrical troupe, Jim Byrne, we do like theatrical readings for the books when they launch. And Jim scored the entire hour long performance. I mean, music the whole time from this guy, mm-hmm. originally written for this book. And then he recorded it like an album's worth. And it's called, if you want to hear it, it's called Sounds Around the House. It's awesome.
Oh, okay.
What's interesting to me is though, the first book that I wrote to no music, a friend of mine went and wrote music for it. It's almost like subconsciously he sensed that this was without music as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You had to fill that void.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you guys should write together, but I feel like if you guys have books coming out at the same time, you and Nat Cassidy should tour together.
You know, I haven't met him yet. Is he awesome?
Oh, he's awesome. He wrote Nestlings. He's also an actor. He's also a musician. He's got a little band.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, I think on Instagram the last few times, he started doing music on there, and he just called it his procrastination playlist.
I saw something, but... But you know what? I would like to get to know that dude. Like, you're right. We have like a lot of common interests.
Yeah,
like
the acting, you know, composing, the whole thing.
I would love to direct a movie that he stars in. That'd be pretty. That'd be amazing to have a fellow horror author acting in a movie. Wouldn't that be sweet?
Well, I think that one of the movies he did was a two-hander. So maybe you guys could just, you know, you could come up with something and you just do two of you in it.
Yeah, man, you know what? I think
if you're okay on that side of the camera, you know.
This conversation is inspiring me to reach out to him in a richer way. Yeah, maybe him and I should just Zoom one night and have some drinks and just talk. That sounds
cool. Oh, yeah, that's cool. I talked to him for a while. I talked to him for about an hour or so, but yeah, he's a blast. It's kind of funny because I mainly have fantasy authors on my channel, but it's the horror authors that were sitting there going, well, we should probably log off now. Paul Jessup's been on twice, and both of them were like 2 hours. It was just,
yeah.
I won't do 2 hours for you. I know it's already late there.
Wait. Where are you?
I'm in Nebraska, so I'm only an hour different.
Wait, yeah. Where in Nebraska?
Omaha.
Oh, dude, I dated a girl from Omaha when I was younger, and so I went out there a number of times, and her parents owned like a pool hall, so I used to go. It was like a suburb, right? Not a suburb. I guess it was a suburb, like right, a little town, whatever, yeah. Right outside Omaha. One of those, you know. And there's a pool hall that her and I would go. I would drive from here out to Omaha and meet up with her and go to her parents' pool hall and stuff. I really liked Omaha. It had that, what do you call it, old town or whatever, that strip.
Yeah, the old market.
Yeah, the old market. Yeah, I went there and there was like a cool used bookstore there. And that was a fun, I like that city. Yeah.
It's a weird vibe for me because I grew up as a kid in a small town. And then I spent like my high school years and stuff. I was in Phoenix, which is huge. And then I moved to Omaha, and it's that size that I don't think it knows what it wants to do with itself.
Sure. I know cities like that here too. Yeah.
Because if you're in a small town, you drive half an hour to get anywhere. If you're in a place like Phoenix, you drive half an hour just to get to the other side of town.
Yeah.
If you're in a place like Omaha, people are like, have you been to that new bookstore? It's like, where is it? It's like, oh, that's like 7 minutes away from my house. I'm not driving that far.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? All right. So we kind of skipped over. Well, we talked about Bird Box a little bit. I watched Bird Box after having read Incidents Around the House.
Oh.
And I realized that it was not the movie that I thought it was, but I feel like the trailer for it maybe didn't really, it had much more of almost, have you ever seen The Happening? Mark Wahlberg.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, definitely. I've seen almost every.
So the Bird Box to me had a little bit of that feeling. You kind of got this big bad, but you don't actually ever see them type thing.
Yeah.
So it's always in your head, like what's going on, which I think was actually perfect. I actually loved that part about it. I feel like if it needed to be a physical, it would have. I was like, yeah, that's a letdown. It's so much better in your head.
Well, it was interesting. I wrote the rough draft in 06 in October, actually, of 06. I started on October 5th of 06, finished it on Halloween. And there was a moment in the book, in writing the rough draft, where I'm like, are you going to show these things? Are you going to do? And then it started to become like, no, that's the point. Like, don't. I didn't set out with that in mind. That started to present itself. And that was like a really awesome discovery. And that's what I'm saying. Like what I would say to a writer, you know, like who cares if it's right, if you know exactly what you're doing, like find out as you go a little bit, you know? And like, that's a major element of that story to have discovered while writing it. And which is, we're never going to see these things. Not in this book. We're not. Yeah.
I think in a lot of times, though, especially horror movies, well, you think about Quiet Place. You don't see the aliens till either the very end of the first one or maybe it was the second movie. But I mean, the whole thing is about the fact that there's this thing going around and you don't know what it is. Like, yeah, it's freaking me out, man.
Yeah. But I'm a fan of all of it. Like, I'll see someone being like, I hate vague endings. I'm like, I don't know. I like vague. I like tied up. I like super gory stuff. I like super understated stuff. I like fast. I like slow burn. I like all of it. I'm not like, you know, someone to be like, oh, I don't like child narrators. Like, what do you mean you don't like child narrators? What if it's done amazingly?
Yeah. Which yours was.
Thank you.
It was quite the lob there too, but you know, no, seriously though, like I said, I don't just randomly ask people on. I ask people on whose books I've loved, and Incidents Around the House just hooked me. But yeah, I don't mind vague endings as long as it's good. I don't like the endings where it just seems like the person didn't know where to end it, so they just stopped.
It's all how it's done. Every single idea is how it's done. Like I could be like, oh, I don't like. Well, I do love sports movies, but I could be like, oh, I don't like sports movies. But if there's a freaking awesome one, then now, okay, well, I guess now I do.
Mm-hmm. Which reminds me, you talked about novellas earlier, and that they're hard to push. I'm actually finding, maybe it's just me, the ones I've been reading lately, novellas seem to have a little bit of a renaissance going right now. There's a lot of
definitely individual novellas. Yeah, no, yeah. That for sure is. I didn't even think about it in those terms. That's funny. I only thought about it as like a book of novellas. I didn't even realize that if I write four of those, then I have four individual ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. The individual novella is like huge right now. But
well, it's, I was just thinking because they both tied together. I just listened to. Yeah, listen to. There's an ML Real one coming out soon, and it's like 3 hours of audiobook. So I mean, it's like 139 pages or something. But it also had kind of, without giving any spoilers, it kind of had that ending where, wait, what? No, I need more. But yeah, in a good way. I think sometimes if you have that ending and you leave that hook, even if there's not a book two, sometimes leave the imagination to the reader.
So. Yeah. And then there are some times where I'm like, you know, a great example would be Stephen King, where somebody seems like let down by like, oh, he doesn't know how to end or whatever. But number one, I think it's pretty brave that he tries, that he like goes for it, that, you know, the ending of It is really far out. And it's like, but you know what? He went for it. He tried. And like, and to me, that's, there's something, like I said, I'm into the like well done, vague, understated, and the big, huge swing that maybe didn't connect. I'm into it all.
So got a couple more questions before we get into the regular stuff, just because I realize it is getting a little close to 9 o'clock here. I can't remember. It might have been that interview I watched, or maybe it was something I read somewhere. And of course, I couldn't find it again. You, I think we've already talked a little bit about incidents around the house, but I remember you telling a story about what had happened. And then when you went to write incidents around the house, it all just came to you like at once. But I can't remember what that starting point was.
So we had two cats, and one of them passed away.
That's right.
And then we went to like the vet that night. It was just, dude, it was awful. And Allison and I are like real freaking out animal lovers. And I mean, these are like, some people say my pets are my children. These are like literally our best friends. And Frankie passed away, and it was brutal. And we get home, and Allison starts painting this awesome mural of Frankie on in the hall, like the front doorway, front hallway. Mm-hmm. And right away, it's starting to look awesome, like right away. And I'm like, well, I'm no stranger to writing an outline or notes of a book of mine on a wall. So, hey, if Allison's writing on the wall, and I came into the office, I brought a chair to reach above the closet and wrote the, you know, it's not an outline. It's more like, more like 15 pointers for writing the book. And for instance, around the house. And it just, yeah, it was just like, okay, yeah, right. And then I think I started it like the next day.
It's always so interesting where inspiration comes from. Sometimes like you, I mean, you wrote this and it rolled out. And then what was the last book? Oh, I've forgotten the name. I apologize.
It's been a black time.
No. Sorry. I was trying to think. There was a Kent Kruger book that just came out.
Oh.
And he talked about the fact that he'd started writing that 30, 40 years ago, and he'd bring it out like every 10. And he jokes that now that he's 70, it's like he had to get to this old to be able to write this book. But, you know, sometimes there's that seed that takes forever to grow. And then there's sometimes where it's just something you almost can't get it out fast enough.
Well, you know, I saw no like direct connection between my cat dying and incidents around the house. But then I posted that story, and the artist Glenn Chadbourne wrote, mm-hmm. This makes total sense, because the wonder that you feel like from your pets or whatever, like brings you back sort of to like a childhood like wonder. And he's like, it actually makes complete sense to me that the loss of a pet resulted in writing a book narrated by a child. And I was like, oh, damn. I was like, yeah, well, I didn't see that, but now maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like Allison in the music. I mean, sometimes if we're too close to the story, we don't see everything. And then all of a sudden somebody points something out and you're like, dang.
Exactly. Right. And it seems right. Cause it's never, and especially if you're like a thinker like you and I and Allison, it's never exactly a straight line. It's a little more interesting than that.
Yeah. But I love that. And like I said, I love that book. One, this is a side note before we get into the generic questions, just because I didn't realize this. I don't know if anybody else would realize this too, because they didn't make nearly as big a deal about it. But you are also the producer on Bird Box Barcelona.
Yeah.
I did not realize it. Now, I just looked. I did not have a chance to watch it because I just found out about it today. I was going through some of your credits, and I'm like, so that looks to me much more like it's not a sequel. It's more like it's just something happening somewhere else at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not saying this like in a disapproving way. I have zero to do with it, except for that I, you know, wrote Bird Box, the world it takes place in. Zero, not one note, not reading a script, like nothing. Like when it was done, we were sent the movie, you know? I was ecstatic that it happened. I hope that they do it again somewhere else. To me, it was like they're playing in your sandbox. Go have fun. Like, it's awesome to me. And so
I'll have to take a look at it. I thought maybe with you getting the producer credit, maybe you had a little more say in it.
No, that's just based on like being involved, like from the origin of the whole project for like being involved with Bird Box. So I had zero. I was not involved at all. And actually, I like it. And at first, when Allison and I were watching at home, I'm like, oh, but this isn't like, I never, what's this scene? And then she's like, actually, this is good. And I was like, maybe it is. And like, and then I just actually just like, let it be what it is. Mm-hmm. Someone else's story in my world. And I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, this is cool.
Cool. No, I'm definitely gonna have to watch that though. Cause like I said, Bird Box was not what I thought it was, but in such a good way. And I love that John Malkovich was in it. It's like, I did not know he was in it from the previews.
Yeah. John Malkovich, man. I didn't meet him. I met just about everyone else, I think, but I did not meet him.
All right. So, we talked about Delaney. One of the questions I usually ask every author is what they're reading. However, Halloween's coming up, so I'm changing this a little bit. Obviously, Incidents Around the House is newer, and you're more than welcome to use that. But for somebody who hasn't read your books, Halloween is coming up. What would you tell them to read of yours?
Goblin, which is a collection of novellas in the city of Goblin. I love that book. It's like six stories of like just totally obsessive characters, wildly different stories. I will also say Pearl is a good Halloween one, but I don't think anything will top Incidents Around the House for Halloween right now. I just think that is the one to read, but Goblin's fun. Like, it's colorful. It feels like an October book. So I can see Goblin. Yeah.
All right. And then if you were going to read somebody else's book for Halloween, what would you pick?
Well, what? Oh, I hadn't thought of it quite like that. I will say that there's a new book by Ross Jeffrey called, and this is a great title, I Died Too, But They Haven't Buried Me Yet. And Ross wrote that at the same time that I was writing Incidents, and we're friends. And so we would start to send each other every 10,000 words. So I was reading his book like as he was doing it, and he was reading Incidents as I was doing it. And now they're both published now in the world, and it's really kind of amazing. It's surreal enough to go through that experience on your own, but to like literally be reading someone else's, and then now you see it on a shelf, you're like, that's so wild. And then my own too. That's, I don't know that it's necessarily an October book, but it's a great book. I mean, honestly, man, yeah, let's go with that one. I Died Too, But They Haven't Buried Me Yet. Yeah.
This is your choice. We will run with it.
Yeah.
And I do like that title. That is,
yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of either really good titles or really good song lyrics. I still say to this day, people make fun of them, but the best song lyric I ever heard was still Billy Ray Cyrus. I'm so miserable since you've been gone. It's almost like you're here. Love that title. All right.
That's a good one.
A couple other generic questions. What skill, hobby, fact about you do you wish more people knew about?
I bet I could outshoot any other horror author in basketball.
Okay. Well, you did play in you told me about the tournament, so there.
Yeah, Daphne's about basketball. I'll bet I would put down like let's do it, let's film it. About like if there's a horror authors out there that shoot, man, I can outshoot you guys.
All right. And then any question that maybe you or expected that didn't get asked, or any question that you'd like to answer that you didn't get asked.
No, not necessarily. But I mean, I do think that, like, to me, just one thing about incidents around the house that, you know, I think the book is more interesting if you look at it as if every family is troubled. So it's not like, Other Mommy is not like a metaphor for the dysfunction of Russ and Ursula. Every family is troubled in some weird ass way. And if they're not, that's troubling. That's scarier. and so I think that incidence is more interesting if you think about it that way. Like, in other words, even that's just reliable and true, rather than Other Mommy targeted this family because they're troubled. Like, maybe in whatever world it exists, it spotted Bella. I don't know why. Exactly why, I don't know. It was attracted to her for some reason, that's for sure. But I don't think it's because her parents have like a messed up thing. Dude, everyone at the parents' party has a messed up thing too. And every one of her friends, or she really only got one friend in the book, Debbie, that girl's life, her family's weird too. Why didn't Other Mommy go for them? So I would never tell someone how to read the book, but I do think that lens is more interesting because it adds to the reliability, the truthfulness, the sort of like slice of life. Because when you look at it that way, it's not a metaphor and it's just a troubled family. Now everything makes so much more sense to me if you throw in Other Mommy into an already troubled scenario. Then it's really relatable because you're like, yeah, what would I do? What would I do if I went upstairs and I saw that thing sitting on the end of my kid's bed? Like, what would I do? Like, would I run in and grab my kid? I think that my instinct tells me that my first thought would be to turn around and run. But my second one would be like, hey, Tim, come here. Like, run to me. Like, I ain't entering that room. Get over here, you know? And like, I think that the book is more interesting seen through that sort of truthful realism lens, because then you really start thinking like it explains everything they do. Like, they're desperate, they're horrified, they're desperate. It explains everything that they all go through if you see it as, no, every family is troubled, and now throw in Other Mommy into this one.
That actually reminded me of one of your characters, because I'd forgotten about it because he was kind of a side character, and I won't give anything away, but I loved your exorcist that came to help them.
Yeah.
Because again, that's another, if that was really happening, that is a 100% completely believable character.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe I read it as too simple. Maybe, you know, that maybe that's why I didn't, you know, get an English major. I didn't read it as a metaphor. I just read it as a horror story.
Me too.
And to me, I think.
Yep. Sorry.
I think it was more frightening because of the fact that they're not having this happen to them because they did something. In other words, this could happen to any of us.
Exactly. I think it's way scarier and way more bizarrely practical to think in those terms. They don't deserve Other Mommy. Neither do any of us. And when you see it that way, you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I do have to say too, it inspired me. I still think that my brain dump, my book review for Other Mommy was some of the best writing I've done on a book review.
I love it.
All right. So one thing I cannot believe I didn't write on here, probably because I just always ask this and maybe I thought I'd remember it. What are you working on right now, or what's coming out next?
So I've only told one other person this. I have a nonfiction book coming out next year, and do not mistake that as me having done research. It's all about this like really profound night that Allison and I had about 12 years ago. And so it's just mostly, that's like the framework for some like major like backdrops, like young love and standing at the head of an artistic career and there's a question, philosophical question asked throughout about writing. And that is coming out through Del Rey hardcover like late summer next year.
Nice. Oh, which reminds me, I meant to ask you, has your documentary already come out?
No. So in fact, while we've been sitting here, This is crazy. It was submitted to South by Southwest Festival tonight. It was just submitted tonight. Nice. Like, literally, I just got that email while you and I are sitting here talking. Yeah.
Okay. What's the name of it going to be? Or is it?
Well, right now it's called To All the Books, but I don't know for sure if that's going to stick. We'll see.
Gotcha. Narrative nonfiction.
Yeah. Yeah. And then talk about the next book being nothing like the one before it. I mean, this could not be more different than anything I've done before.
Well, considering you just said it was nonfiction and your last book was Incidents Around the House, I hope it's nothing like the one before it. That would maybe change some worldviews.
That'd be awesome if to follow. Wow, that would be amazing to follow incidents up with like the real story it was based on, even though there isn't one.
Little did you know. All right. And then last question I ask this of every author. I'm not an Amazon hater, but I am a lover of independent bookstores. So just a shout out to a brick and mortar store that you happen to like.
Oh, there's a lot of amazing ones around here, but I'm going to go with the Library Bookstore in Ferndale, BookBeat. And BookBeat sells my books at like all of our theatrical readings. These are all amazing. And Toadvine. Oh man, do they have a good horror section? Those three are exceptional for different reasons, but they're all completely awesome.
And a fun name too, Toadvine. All right. Yeah. Not tonight because it's getting late and I'm tired. But I will get links to all of those so that anybody who's watching this tomorrow, that I have links to those bookstores at the bottom of the YouTube video.
Right on. That all sounds right. Amazing.
So, okay. Didn't see a whole lot of questions. Obviously, Jesse's a fan. But I want to thank you for hopping on again, taking your time out. Absolutely loved Incidents Around the House. Gonna watch The Bird Box. And to be honest, it may sound weird, but I can't wait to see the documentary. And I don't watch a lot of documentaries, though.
So. Yeah, I can't freaking wait for this thing to come out. I'm so excited. It's not that dissimilar to what we're doing right now. You'll see what I mean. Yeah. All right. Thank you. This was wonderful. And from the minute we started, there was a certain, what's the right word? Intelligence or intellect. And your angle on incidents was very warm. And I really like talking about it in this way. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, that, like I said, that book stuck in my craw. I just love it. I don't do quite as much horror as I used to. But yeah, that was just one. I couldn't get it out of my head. All right. So thank you for your time. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thanks, Jesse, for hopping on while we're live. And I hope everyone who watches this later enjoys it.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.